Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power, but we're going to be taking you into an environment of perception, intuition being experienced in different ways. And my guest today is just a really intriguing man because he's walked a path that is a unique one. And with this movie project that he did, the Life After Death Project, it is absolutely intriguing because it takes you into an environment of not just experiences that other people go through, but a touch of history as well. And Paul Davids, who is my guest today, is also going to be sharing his own personal experiences. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Donna. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully. I understand you're in glorious Big Bear, California, which is an incredible place. It's just absolutely gorgeous. And we are just so delighted you're able to join us today. You're a very, very busy man. You've been involved with making films for a long time. But why did you decide that this is something that you wanted to do? I love the cover. You'll have to explain the cover that you have on your DVD package because it's about a very, very special man. Let's go into that. First, what got you involved in this project and who is this man?
Well, I would say it's the man who got me involved in it. His name is Forrest J. Ackerman, but involved posthumously. I knew Fari for over 40 years. Let me tell you who he is. He was born in 1916. He lived through the whole development of the movies since the silent era. And mm-hmm. he was an expert in science fiction, a promoter of science fiction films, fantasy films, and horror. He was a great collector. He lived in an 18-room house that he called the Acker Mansion that he absolutely filled with memorabilia from the whole history of science fiction and fantasy cinema, art, posters, lobby cards, photographs, books. And he opened this to the public. He shared it with the public for decades. And he edited a magazine that was very popular with my generation, kids, baby mm-hmm. boomers, particularly guys. It was called Famous Monsters of Filmland. And it was one of the, it was actually the first magazine to make its main subject movie monsters, but he did it with a sense of humor, puns and quips and funny captions. And he had a great following. And I was one of the kids that followed him. I entered a movie contest for amateurs when I was a young teenager, and I was a winner in his contest. And I got to know him then. So I knew him throughout my life. And I've worked in Hollywood for decades. Now, I started on the Transformers show. I did some of the Star Wars books for George Lucas. Mm-hmm. And I've done, I think, 9 films now for television. They've come out around the world on TV. Had a very close relationship with Fari, who was a skeptic, an atheist, didn't believe in life after death. But toward the end of his life, and he died at 92, in 2008, he told me that, if it turned out that he was wrong, you know, maybe he'd drop me a line.
And don't you just love that when somebody says, well, if I happen, I'll drop in on you and let you know after I'm gone.
I'll drop you a line, you know, with a wink. And he, you know, he added humor to that, too, because he said, you know, he says, don't expect anything, but if I wake up to some great science fiction convention in the sky, he said, first of all, I want you to know I'm going to be busy for a long time, having reunions with Boris Karloff and Peter Lorre and Bela Lugosi and George Powell and Lon Chaney and the other greats of, you know, his field. He said, but, you know, if the parties will die down eventually, and, you know, maybe I'll get around to dropping you a line. So, you know, we took it with a grain of salt and tongue-in-cheek. But what happened is a whole series of events started that have continued for 4 years. It's unbelievable. It started a couple of months after he passed. There was a huge tribute for him in Hollywood at the Egyptian Theater. Every seat was filled. There were about 10 speakers, and most of them very well known.
Mm-hmm.
People like Guillermo del Toro and Ray Bradbury, who was his close friend for life. And I was one of the speakers, too, as someone who's worked in the business and known him for so long. So there was this great feeling of camaraderie. And that weekend, two filmmakers from Canada who had come in to show a movie they had made about him went to his crypt, knocked on the crypt, rapped on the crypt, actually, you know, very playfully saying, "Hello, Uncle Fari." Everybody mm-hmm. called him Uncle Fari. Mm-hmm. "Are you there?" And they told everyone that they heard back from him within an hour, and they were in shock. They both had an experience where...
All right, yeah. We've got to hear about this experience, because so many times when people hear this kind of story, excuse me for interrupting you, but so many times when people hear this kind of a statement, they go, "Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. This is just like a horror film knocking on a crypt going, "Hello, are you there?"
Yes.
And then, you know, this is so cool because it's like a Twilight Zone special. Okay,
yeah.
You got
to
tell me.
Except it's true. And I want everybody to know that this film is absolutely not exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the Blair Witch Project. The film was made, and you asked me why it was made, because real events, some of them with physical evidence, that were later tested by scientists at three universities who were absolutely baffled. A long string of events, I'd say almost 50 of them, continuing mm-hmm. over 4 years, is all documented in the Life After Death Project. And it started with a couple of small incidents that you might, you know, sort of have a wink at. As a matter of fact, with your joke about rapping on the crypt, because Fari, you know, he had Bela Lugosi's cape. Bela played Dracula. And he wore Bela Lugosi's
so cool.
ring, so this was like Hollywood typecasting.
Oh,
and when
absolutely.
When you knocked on his door to visit his collection, a voice would come through the loudspeaker that said, "Who dares disturb the sleep of the vampire?" that was his, you know, his style,
sure.
And it was all done with fun. But it started with the Canadian filmmakers who tried to post onto Facebook a blog within an hour of visiting the crypt, and a CAPTCHA code comes up. You have to type in, you know, the letters, the random letters and
mm-hmm.
numbers, and the CAPTCHA code that came up was his name. It was Ackerman 000, and I mean, the odds of that happening are, it's just about zero. I mean, maybe you could say coincidence. Maybe you could say that for some of the things that happen. But so many things happened, and with physical evidence. So the next thing that happened was they started talking about Ackerman 000, and one of the guys says, "Does this mean he's not really dead?" And they had two computers on the desk, and the other one was down, and the screen was black. It wasn't logged onto the internet. It wasn't awake. But a voice came out of that computer that said, "Oh, my gosh, no way." It was a childlike voice. There was a screensaver image of Fari Ackerman when he was a 4.5-year-old boy that they had placed on that computer. So the voice kind of went with the picture there.
Mm-hmm.
And they later found out this is an emoticon that says, "Oh my gosh, no way." You can find it at YouTube. But they weren't logged on to YouTube. And as mm-hmm. as Ian Johnston of Toronto said, "My computer had no business talking to me." But it did.
You love it. Oh, I
so,
think that's so
here's
cool.
the thing. I heard the story, and I just had to go by their sincerity. You could tell by their shock about the whole thing that they were telling the truth. So what do you do with that? You can't explain it. And then it was about a week later, here's how I got involved. I was alone in my vacation house in Santa Fe, and it was getting to be tax time. I printed out a 24-page document of all my business calls and meetings, and I was going to go over it looking for things that related to deductions. And here's the thing. I printed it, I pressed the print command, and I went out of the house for about an hour, hour and a half, to one of the local Indian casinos to have some fun for a while. So when I got back to the house, obviously this document was dry. It had been printed an hour and a half before.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked it up, looked it over. There was nothing unusual about it. And I tossed it onto the bed. I was going to climb into bed and go over it, you know. And I was in the bathroom for a few minutes. Here's where my life changed. Here's why there now exists a film called The Life After Death Project. When I walked out of the bathroom and looked at the document, it had been changed. There were four words blacked out with ink that was still moist, very neatly targeted with precision, those mm-hmm. four words clearly selected and blacked out. There was no one else in the house but me. I didn't do it. You can imagine how I felt at that moment. You know, I mean, my heart was in my throat. And this began a series of events. First of all, why did it happen? What did it mean? Why those words? They were blacked out in two different levels of darkness. Why that? Who was in contact with me? What were they trying to say? This was physical evidence. I'm the kind of person who, when something like this happens, I started a quest that lasted 3 years. I was on the phone within days to the chairman of the chemistry department of Indiana University, Dr. J. Siegel. Expert, world-class in inks, solvents, paints, testified in many, many court trials involving chemistry, forensic mm-hmm. chemist. He invited me, actually, to FedEx him the document. I said, Dr. Siegel, it's not going to leave my hands. I'm not going to take a chance it gets lost somehow. I'm getting on a plane, and I'd like to bring my video camera and film what you test in the lab with this. So that's what happened. And his tests with gas chromatography confused him. He couldn't get to the bottom of it from that. And he wanted electron microscope work and all kinds of other tests. He called in a scientist at the College of New Jersey that he'd worked with, also an expert in the same fields, Dr. John Allison. So then I'm on a plane to New Jersey. Mind you, something strange happened in the lab with one of the computers of Dr. Siegel while I was there that troubled him, that a computer that they had turned off and they'd shut down a certain program, while he's testing my document, it comes to life, it turns itself back on, and it relogs itself back onto that program that they had shut down. You know, he did a double take at that. Everybody thought, well, you know, scientists don't usually use the word spooky, but mm-hmm. you know, it was.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what happened. Dr. John Allison works on this for 3 years, trying every solvent known to man to try to find something that can cause that level of opaqueness, pulling the ink out of the document. And he can't. He couldn't solve it. He says it remains a scientific mystery to this day. He involved classes of students in it year after year. You know, you'd enroll in this class, and the Paul Davids ink blot would be one of your projects trying to solve it. And students would graduate, and a new class would come in, and they'd still be working on the mystery of the ink blot.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, Donna. That ink blot, this was the beginning of these strange activities. And I did determine it made perfect sense that those words blocked out was a message from Fari Ackerman.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the timing with the crypt, his closest caregiver for the last 10 years had had an apparition of him coming to him to thank him for the tribute. And the words that were blocked out, in Fari's own way, where he used puns and wordplay and word twists, and he always looked for the name within a name or the word within a word. So he picked a name to block out that had, it's the middle syllable, the name of his caregiver. And it was, so he was telling me, spoke to Joe Moe.
Mm-hmm.
Spoke to Joe Moe. That's the message. Joe Moe is the man who had the apparition of him coming to him. And Joe was a skeptic, and he was, astonished by this experience that he had, that he he didn't know whether to categorize it as a sort of a waking dream. Is it a hallucination? Is it a real apparition?
Mm-hmm.
But the message to me seemed to be confirmation that it was real.
Now, something that you bring out in your movie that I was very intrigued with is that Ackerman is the focus, and the cover, as I said, I absolutely love the drawing. The drawing is great, and there's a couple of goodies that we'll bring out about that drawing that makes this documentary, Life After Death Project, the Life After Death Project, really intriguing. But you were doing something with masks, and in the film, and I'm going to pull out little things, so excuse me for digressing, because this is different points in the film. There was a particular African mask hanging on a wall, and then there was one, I think.
Actually, there are three masks involved. The African mask wasn't hanging on a wall. That one was in a display case.
A display case, okay. But there was an electrical charge. Tell us about what in your film, because there were the masks and
yes.
the African mask specifically. You had the equipment to measure
yes.
the electrical charge. Now, people that have been involved in any science and research regarding different places on the planet, different items, that there's an energy that is radiated. We're all energy anyway. But you have this field of energy sometimes, almost like a magnetic field, that emanates from certain items that can be quite, quite old. And it can be a religious item. It can be something like this mask. Tell us about this mask and why you were trying to measure it. Why this is so significant.
Right. The mask was on loan to me from a close friend who I'd worked with in the past. And it was sort of as an art object in the Santa Fe home, in the very next room to where the inkblot happened. And it was from Zimbabwe. It had been danced in a ceremony. And actually, this doesn't prove anything, but, I mean, it was the kind of thing that Fari Ackerman, of course, would have loved, because it was as though it was straight out of King Kong, and he had a vast collection of masks in his collection. Again, that's just a point. But the day after the inkblot happened, I had someone come in with an electromagnetic field measurer and check out the whole house to see if we could find anomalies. And there was nothing in the bedroom where the inkblot happened. But this mask that was right at the other side of the door got absolutely, top of the chart, blips and light flashing from this meter. And I had the camera rolling, and we recorded it. And there's no metal parts in this mask. And let me tell you, it's never happened again, subsequently. I mean, years have gone by. This was 2009. But that day, there were really intense anomalous readings. And there was EVP on the soundtrack. There was a voice that I discovered later in post-production, right while we were doing those testings on the mask. This is actually explained in the sequel to the movie, because let me digress and just tell everybody that the DVD comes out. It's out today. Today's the day for national release, so you can find it anywhere, online. And I did two DVDs. I also did a sequel with a lot of additional cases about life after death evidence and updates about the Ackerman case. So this is included there, that there was electronic voice phenomena. The word Lenore was there on the soundtrack in between all this beeping. And there was no one physically there who would have said Lenore. Lenore makes me think of Poe, Edgar Allan Poe, for the Raven and his poem Lenore. And Fari was a massive fan of Edgar Allan Poe. I say this with a smile and tongue in cheek, but maybe, if he's having fun in the afterlife, I'm sure he's there with Edgar Allan Poe, and they're having their times together.
Oh, I imagine so.
But anyway, that mask was strange. But there were two other masks involved in this I want to mention. One was a Huichol mask from Mexico. And I was having a dinner party one night. And there were about seven people there, including, by the way, famous singer Rebecca Del Rio, known for her role in Mulholland Drive, David Lynch's film. So we're there, and somebody makes an innocent comment. And I did like a Fari Ackerman thing of doing a wordplay, of twisting a couple words in the comment they made. And I turned it into a dirty joke, okay? Everybody bursts out laughing. And at that instant, that mask from Mexico popped off the wall. And it flew about 4 feet through the air. It went over a lampshade. It wasn't like something falling off the wall. It had to go over a lampshade, and it landed at my feet. And we were all dumbfounded. It was right across on the opposite wall from a portrait of Fari Ackerman. But the clincher, and here's the real clincher for me to tie this stuff to Fari. The day I heard we had a broadcast deal with Sci-Fi Channel to put the Life After Death project on the air, it was on one time in May. That day, I headed out to lunch for an hour and a half. Now, in my office in my home, I have a plastic mask of Fari's face that I obtained at his estate auction. And I've kept it in the same place for 4 years on display. It hadn't moved. No one had touched it. I went out to lunch. That day, when I came back, no one had been in the house. The door to my office is closed. There are no open windows. There's no drafts or anything like that. The mask moved 10 feet from where it had been for the last 4 years. Who moved it? And it's his face. And it's the day that we're celebrating because we know the movie's going to be on TV. So, you see, you have to see it to understand how all the pieces fit together like a vast puzzle. You know, 40 to 50 separate incidents over 4 years. What does it mean? Let's get to what it means. I think there are, first of all, many ways you can study life after death. There's religion. There's religious beliefs. There's heaven and hell and limbo and purgatory. There's the Hindus with their millions of heavens and reincarnation. So there's all the different types of religious beliefs. There are theories about lives between lives. There is ITC, which is instrumental transcommunication, an attempt to communicate and pierce the veil using our technology.
That's what Edison wanted to do, too, and he was working on that.
Yes, telephones. Yes. Today we have computers. We have cell phones. And can these pick up signals? Professor Gary Schwartz, who's in my film, you'll see things in his laboratory, University of Arizona, Tucson. He says yes. Yes, ITC is real. He's proving it in his lab. He's developing software using very sensitive instruments in order to communicate with spirits. It's trailblazing work. Science rejects this kind of thing almost out of hand, but a peer-reviewed journal has published his work. It's getting serious attention. So that's a way that you can study it. And there's the electronic voice phenomena, EVP. There's near-death experience. We have Danian Brinkley in our film. Famous case of a man struck by lightning who was, for all intents and purposes, deceased for half an hour with no breathing, no heart rate, no EKG, and yet returned to tell the story that there is life after death. And Dr. Eben Alexander, who wrote Proof of Heaven, a recent bestseller, has a similar kind of spellbinding story. So there's all these things. But then there's also what we call ADC, after-death communication. That's the focus of the Life After Death Project, and it is, is there enough reason to believe that personality, spirit, survives the loss of the body, the death of the body, that life continues in a non-corporeal form? Today, instead of calling them spirits, sometimes we call them discarnate entities. So is that true? And if it is true, can people who have passed on give us signals, give us messages, manipulate things in our world, make things appear, call those apports, do things to let us know that there is this other side, this other world, this parallel world or you know, whatever you want to call it, where people go when they pass on, can they reach out to us and let us know? I think now the answer to that is absolutely yes. I never would have said it. Never would have said it 5-6 years ago. I was a skeptic too. So
well,
I just
no,
say...
I love it. I love skeptics. I love it when they really get whacked. And that's what happened with you. You got whacked
with all kinds
of experiences. And that's what you bring out in your film, The Life After Death Project. Now, I want to go back to the artwork because I really adore...
Oh, yeah.
Someone could say, oh, this is woo-woo stuff. All right, you can woo-woo all you want. But I will say this. When Ackerman, when this picture was done of Ackerman, it showed a clock in the background, mm-hmm. showed the exact time on the clock, the hands of the clock are just a few minutes before 12, shows a bookcase behind him. It also shows Ackerman's hand, it's like he's putting a finger up to his lips to say, shh, and there's this ring that's there that you mentioned earlier.
It's the ring he always wore from Bela Lugosi.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and it's exceptionally ornate. Now, this picture was done, if I remember correctly, in 2004.
Correct.
And it wasn't until after his passing that someone looked at it and said, look at the clock. That's the exact time of his death.
That's right.
So whoever was doing the artwork, what I would say is that they were a conduit of information regarding what was going to happen with Ackerman and putting in his time of death. And there are going to be individuals that say, it's just, oh, my goodness, no, because he was involved in horror. Midnight is considered the hour of the transformation, whether you're talking about Cinderella or whatever, because you're entering into a new 24-hour period. So there's all kinds of little statements that
you make. Donna, you know, you're allowed to categorize a certain number of things as coincidences in life, you know,
mm-hmm.
but not when there's 40 of them. When it gets to be, you know, it passes what we call a critical mass. And regarding the time of death being predicted in that, there were two other incidents that are, see the sequel, which comes with the movie, and you'll,
mm-hmm.
you'll see, I show, someone sent me a watch that had belonged to Fari. It was a Wizard of Oz watch, had Dorothy on it. No one had touched it since, I mean, it just hadn't been touched in years. And it was at a couple minutes to midnight, the hands on mm-hmm. the watch. And the man who sent it to me, who had it in stuffed in a box with a lot of old collectibles, he didn't know when Fari had died. He'd been completely out of touch. Then when I went to see Dr. Schwartz in University of Arizona, Tucson, we're talking about Fari and his death and these phenomena, and suddenly an alarm clock rings. Gary looks around in shock. He didn't know where this alarm clock is. He finds it buried under his seat. It's a travel alarm clock. He says he didn't set it, didn't set the alarm. Again, the hands are at a couple of minutes to 12 when this
mm-hmm.
happened. You know, it's like, okay, are we going to ignore all of this? Are we going to say, no, these are not messages because they're just coincidences? You know, that's foolish. You know, that's really foolish. There's something here, and my challenge has been go to the scientists, as I did, three universities involved in this project. Go to the skeptics. Michael Shermer, head of the Skeptic Society, he's in the movie. I gave him his chance to speak his piece. He can't explain any of these things, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He has his points to make, which are intelligent and interesting, but he admits there are weird things that happen to people that can't be explained. The question is, what do we conclude from that? And he's going to conclude something different from what I conclude. I conclude there's life after death.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask everybody to, you know, please pick up the Life After Death Project. As I say, it's two movies plus 40 minutes of bonus features. You'll be sitting with this for over 4 hours, taking it all in. And then, you know, what do you think? Viewers, listeners, you
mm-hmm.
can reach me at lifeafterdeathproject.com. You can contact me, send me an email, tell me what you think. If you've had an experience, let me know. I answer them all. And I've become a messenger for this through, as I say, I didn't choose this. It chose me.
Well, Paul, this has been just delightful. And I think when you go through it, and I love the artwork on the front, and I think Ackerman has left a phenomenal legacy. And the story about his estate, the haunted house, there's so many other points. I'm telling you, there's a lot.
Even the ring that traveled 4,000 miles after his death and ended up at near the house of the Canadian filmmaker that knocked on his crypt. I mean, it's an incredible jigsaw puzzle.
It really is, and it just makes for wonderful conversation. And you know what I find, Paul? I find, invariably, whenever I start talking about things like this, people will say, Donna, can I talk to you for a minute? And they'll take me to the side and they'll share it. A story that is related to a member of their family. I've had experiences. It is just wonderful that you've put this together, the Life After Death Project. Now, I do want to let my listeners know, you can go to the website, Life After Death Project. You also can go to Paul's personal website, which is pauldavids-artist.com. So those are two websites. If this is a subject matter that really intrigues you, fascinates you, the movie has a lot of most curious points. And I think you will find it absolutely wonderful to tuck away in your subjects to bring up when the conversation lags with people. It's absolutely delightful. Their hair may stand up on the back of their neck, but what fun. Paul, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest. Enjoy your time in Big Bear and have a magnificent summer.
Donna, thank you for letting me tell the story. I appreciate it.
It has been a joy. This is Donna Sebo. Check out Life After Death Project. .com or pauldavids-artist.com, the Life After Death Project, the movie. Really interesting. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, well, just give me a buzz, and I'm more than happy to do that. And if you have a question, I'll be glad to answer it for you if there's something of particular concern to you. So call me at 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a little bit of wisdom by a man, Tony Bennett. Now, gracious, I don't know how old Tony is. I think he's in his 80s, but he's really still performing. That's right. And he regaled so many people with his easygoing voice for years. And here he is as a very mature man, which you wouldn't expect would still be performing, but he is. He's doing new recordings. He's active. But he said there are two creative disciplines that he has followed all of his life. Creative disciplines. He said it's singing and painting. When he performs, he interacts with his musicians and the audience. He said it's very social for him. It's a very social endeavor. He said when he paints, it's just him and a blank canvas that's seated in front of him. That's it. He said the singing and the painting create what he calls his yin-yang or yin-yang balance because they complement each other. He said he's able to always be in a creative zone but never have to feel burned out by doing just one thing. Now, this is Tony Bennett, but I have to tell you, it triggered a story that I recalled about someone that I knew personally when I was a teenager. His name was Dr. Bloom. Dr. Bloom was an eye surgeon, a wonderful, wonderful doctor, and just loved dealing with people. Well, when the man got into his 50s, and I think he was in his 50s, close to 60, if not in his 60s, when he told me his story. And again, I'm just a young teenager. I don't know why he's telling me the story, but he is. He said that he had had a heart attack, and it really scared him. He was in very, very serious condition. And being a man who had been involved with surgery and had been this precise person and dealing with people. He was very, very delightful as a doctor. He really cared about his patients. When he had the heart attack, that meant that he had to slow down. Now, he was accustomed to going like the Energizer Bunny, and so to be told he had to slow down, the stress in slowing down was getting to be worse than if he had been working full-time. So he had a colleague that said to him, "You're a very creative man. You are such a fine surgeon. You deal with detail so beautifully. You are very, very good with people. You're a wonderful speaker. Why don't you try doing some art?" Well, he just didn't get it. He couldn't seem to associate with painting. That wasn't something that was of interest to him. So his colleague said, "Why don't you sculpt? You're a surgeon. You're accustomed to dealing with very fine, exacting movements." So Dr. Bloom, he started to sculpt. Now, what happened after that, according to Dr. Bloom, is that when he finished a sculpture, and people loved his work, they just loved his sculpture, it was like this latent artist was coming out, he'd go into a severe depression. Now, he had started back to work, but he was told by his doctor he could not truly go back to the pace he had had before. He had to do things differently. So he did that, and he said he went into these deep depressions when he'd finish working on a sculpture. So his colleague that had encouraged him to do it, they were having this discussion. His colleague said, "Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Bloom, why don't you have more than one project that you're working on in different stages. Have one that you start and put it up on the shelf. You got to finish in another time." So he literally was multitasking. He would start a project or get an idea, and then he would work on completing one, but there was always another one for him to pick up on. And he said it made all the difference in the world to him. Then he stopped having the depressions because he had something else that he had to do. And now, as a mature adult, when I reflect upon the story that he told me when I was a young teenager, I think to myself, when I read this about Tony Bennett, that we have to keep a balance. There needs to be something we can always look forward to accomplishing, whether it is what we consider a career direction, or something that we absolutely have a passion for and love. but it's having more than one item to deal with. So having something to look forward to, something else to do. And I don't know about you, but I often joke that the women in the world live longer than the guys because we never run out of something to do. It's either a floor to vacuum, a baby's diaper to change, a toilet to clean, or God knows what else that we're going to have to do. And so often men, just like Dr. Bloom, will set a goal, and this is the way they're indoctrinated, that that's finished, that's done, that's it. And there's nothing else to do. Well, in today's world, you don't follow that format. Dr. Bloom went on to live a number of years. I lost touch with him after a while. And I know that even though he's on the other side at this time, that this is something that he probably kept up. But he needed to balance his life. And through his physician telling him what he needed to do on the professional level, cutting back on the stresses of that, and a colleague that said, open yourself up to something new. Let this creative side of yourself flow. It was just amazing. And from what I understand, his sculptures on the eye were displayed in medical training facilities because they were so magnificently done. The man left a legacy. He left it in the mind of a young teenager who now, as a mature woman, is sharing part of that legacy with you. You need to remember, I think, that you're not just one level of anything. You have multiple facets to yourself. And part of life's journey is exploring those multiple facets. Sometimes we may have an illness that forces us to change patterning. Other times it could be finances. It could be a natural catastrophe of some kind. It can be anything. It doesn't have to be bad. It's change. And that gives us the opportunity to say, where do I go from here? What else can I explore? And when you do that, it makes your world a fascinating one, because you'll realize you'll never run out of areas or arenas of interest to explore, and it opens you up to a whole new environment of people, opportunities, and experiences. This is what life is all about, and it's a joy. And that's why I really enjoy having people like Paul David on, because it presents different paradigms, different experiences. Maybe you'd like to explore it, or maybe you've had experiences of your own. Check out different groups that maybe have a similar interest area as you do. Find out if you want to, well, let's say, explore their world to find out what their experiences are. Life is so interesting. At least I think so. And by the way, I said I would share something with you, a recipe for a German apple pancake, and this has just been a winner. No matter when you serve this, it is absolutely spectacular, and it can be for dinner, it can be for a special brunch or lunch, but I love it as a breakfast. It is something that in the Sebo household is well-loved, and I served it to guests this past Sunday, so I will share it with you. I think you're going to enjoy it. So have that pad of paper and pen handy, because it is something that is easy to do, a blender's involved, quick, easy, got it made. You'll find out more in just a moment. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in a moment.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top-of-the-line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna, quick like a bunny. I want to let you know that tomorrow we're going to be talking about finding the fountain of youth. Rick Kilby is going to be my guest. Well, there's a lot of stuff about the fountain of youth. Did you hear about it when you were studying history in school? We're going to get the real stuff about the state of Florida, which is one of the hot spots for people to travel to, literally all year round, because of Disney World and other places. But we're going to find out more about this fascinating state, and we are going to be talking on Thursday about powering up your health. Dr. Wiley and Danny Torres are two men who really want to empower people about wellness. And Dr. Wiley, my goodness, he's got a phenomenal background, as does Danny Torres. And we're going to be talking about what you can do for this, for yourself, where you have more empowerment physically. Hey, you want that chassis to really be in good shape so that you can make your life as rich as you want it to be? Then we're going to be talking about new science and spirituality. Can science and spirituality become teammates? Absolutely. Dennis Kingsley is going to be my guest on Friday, and oh, we just have so much to share with you, and I'm so delighted that you are joining me. It's just a joy. Okay, I promised you this German apple pancake. Now, I do have to say that this recipe came out of an old cookbook that I have. It was done by Bon Appetit, and this is just a win-win recipe. If you want to serve something that's really spectacular, that the flavors are over the top, this is something that is awesome. And I just love it. Now, you're going to have two segments here. You're going to have the ingredients for the batter, which I'm going to give you, and also the fruit mixture, which I'm going to give you. So if you got that pen and paper handy, here we go. Now, this serves, these are two large German pancakes, so you're going to need two big pans, and it's going to serve 6 to 8 people, dependent on their appetites. And you can cut the recipe in half, because I've done that. I've cut the recipe in half. Okay, this is the basic recipe. You're going to need, for the batter, 8 extra large eggs. All the ingredients should be at room temperature. 8 extra large eggs, 1 cup, 5 ounces of unbleached all-purpose flour, 1 cup unbleached all-purpose flour, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/8 of a teaspoon of salt, 2 cups of milk, and you can use half and half if you want. Whatever your choice is, it'll create a more custard-like consistency when you bake it if you use half and half, personal experience speaking. But you do what you want to do. 1/4 cup, which is 1/2 stick of butter, this should be melted. This should be in a liquid form, and 2 teaspoons of vanilla. I always add extra vanilla. That's just me. All right, so those are the ingredients for the batter. Oh, I forgot. 1/4 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg. Freshly grated is very important. It makes all the difference in the world with the flavor. Now, here's the fruit mixture. You're going to need 1/2 cup, 1 stick of unsalted butter. You're going to need 1 1/3 cups of sugar. That's about 9.5 ounces. You're going to need 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of freshly grated nutmeg, and 2 large tart apples. A Granny Smith is great. Again, you want a firm apple, and it needs to be peeled, halved, cored, and thinly sliced. It's going to come to up to about 2 cups. I'll tell you, I don't peel the apple. I leave the skin on. I core it, but I just leave the skin on. I love the color. Now, this is what you do for your batter. And the batter you can make the night before. and you can just zip it in your blender. You take the first six ingredients of your batter, your eggs, your flour, your sugar, your baking powder, your salt, and your milk. And I'll tell you what I do. I also throw in the butter and the vanilla and the nutmeg. I put the whole kit and caboodle in a blender, and I blend it. That's what I do. Put the lid on the blender, stick it in the refrigerator. Now, if you don't put it in the fridge the night before, it takes you just a few seconds to get all the stuff together, zap it, put it in the refrigerator. You can do this, let's say, an hour before you're going to put it actually in the oven to cook. So just put it in the refrigerator. Let it rest. The batter needs to rest. It just does a beautiful job of thickening up, and it's just awesome when you do that. You should let the batter stand at room temperature. If you refrigerate it, you should let it stand at room temperature 30 minutes before you are going to be putting it in the pan. Now, you're going to need to heat, when you're ready for the fruit mixture, you are going to put, when you're ready to cook, your oven is preheated to 425 degrees. Now, again, you're going to need two 10-inch oven-proof skillets. And you want to use nonstick cooking spray around the base and the edges of the inside of the pan, and add a little bit of butter. You can melt, some of the butter there, right there in the pan, and you want to make sure, again, it's well greased. Now, once you do that, you remove the pans from the heat. You're going to take your sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, and blend those well in a bowl. You'll take and put a third of a cup over the butter in each skillet. So that sugar layer goes in first. Your apple slices, you arrange them attractively and evenly over the butter and the sugar. And then the remaining sugar mixture, you sprinkle over your apples. And what you're going to do, you want to put your skillets over medium-high heat until your mixture just begins to bubble. You take them off the heat, put your batter into each of the pans, dividing them evenly, put them in the oven, and bake them for 15 minutes at 425 degrees. And then you turn your heat down after 15 minutes to 375, baking it an additional 10 minutes. At the end of 10 minutes, you can turn it off. If you're busy getting other stuff ready for your meal, whatever it is, they can sit in the oven, and it is going to rise beautifully. And you want to sort of arrange the timing so when you have them all seated at the table, then you bring out these beautiful creations, and they're going to ooh and ah over it. And the flavor is spectacular. And I'll tell you, I use additional cinnamon, extra nutmeg, experiment with this, and this pancake you can make with pears, and it is delicious. And I also add walnuts. That's right. When I put the apples in, I sprinkle walnuts. If I use pears instead of apples, I use almonds. And you can use almond flavoring in the batter. So that's just a Donna tip. Have fun with it. Oh, is it good, and does it smell heavenly when it's cooking? I guarantee you it will be a phenomenal success whenever you serve it. So that is one of the favorites, like I said, at the SIBO household, and I love preparing it. You can cut this recipe in half, so it'll serve four people. Or if someone has a super hearty appetite, it'll serve two. But believe me, it is filling. It's delicious. Serve it with bacon, maybe some scrambled eggs to go along with it. Whatever is your pleasure, it is just going to be a winner. Donna SIBO here. I'm so delighted that you've been able to join me today. I look forward to having you be a part again of some wonderful programming. I'm so delighted that you shared your time with me, and I look forward to having you join me again. We've got some wonderful people. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life's an adventure. Won't you enjoy the journey? And don't forget to try some new things in your life. I don't care if it's a new recipe, reading a different book, saying hello to a stranger and asking yourself, I wonder what their story is. Being open to the opportunities of life. Life is rich. savor it. It's a gift. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.